February 14th, 2011, Washington, D.C., the United States of America, planet Earth, third planet from the sun. I just got in late last night from CPAC, and Everything But the Girl, One Place, is playing right now, and it's good to be back in one place. Chosen profession takes me to D.C. and New York and Miami and places like that all the time, and it's good to be home. It really is. I had a great time at CPAC over the weekend and got a chance to meet a lot of nice people and spend some time with some of the people I watch on Fox News and places like that. You know, you get to see them up close. And one thing you learn about people you see on TV, I'm going to go ahead and throw this out there, no disrespect to anyone I met at CPAC who may get to, but one notice is that for some, I don't know what it is, but all of these people have really huge heads. I mean, they have really huge heads, like no shoulders and really huge heads. And I think part of it is what makes folks very telegenic, you know, very very TV-like. And I first noticed this when I met I didn't meet him. I got a chance to watch Miami Vice being filmed in its last couple of seasons in Miami when I was living down in South Florida, and I noticed that Don Johnson, who stands about 5'6", maybe 5'7". He had this huge head. And then Philip Michael Thomas and some of the other actors, right around the same height. Just really short guys, these giant heads. Robert Redford is another. I was about 11 years old when he was filming The Sting in Chicago, underneath one of the L tracks on 43rd near Indiana. And he's about 5'4", maybe 5'5". And he has this huge head, too. So I think there's something to that. But most of the folks I met at CPAC, really great, wonderful people with these giant heads and very small bodies. Okay, so gotten that out of the way. CPAC, great, great time. Huge heads, a lot of folks, no shoulders. All right, Obama's budget. Oh, my goodness. I tell you what, can we talk about it for a minute? Let's talk about it. You know, in his radio address, over the weekend, his Saturday radio address, he suggested that we must curb our spending and balance our budgets just like everybody else does, just like every normal average American. But as usual, he says one thing and he does something completely different. This budget is all about taxing and spending. Taxing and spending. He wants to tax anything and everything he can get away with, just so he can spend it. Not to balance the budget, not to curb our spending as it relates to the deficit, but simply to bring in more revenue so that he can spend it. Okay, if the government wants to balance its budget, if the government wants to be responsible, and the president wants to lead the way in this effort, then why all this talk about investing? Investing and winning the future. Because if we keep spending money we don't have, will there even be a future? How will we win it? Take, for example, high-speed rail and high-speed wireless internet. As I stated in a previous Blog Talk radio show, if I'm trying to curb my spending and look to the future of my children, because that's what we're talking about here, the children of the future. They're our future, you know, our young ones. They're the future. So break it down to my family. Let's say I have young ones. I want to invest in their futures, right? So in order to invest in their futures and win the future, what should I do? Should I go out and get high-speed wireless for my house? Should I invest in a new, faster car? Because apparently I want to win the future and I want to invest. So I'm going to go from 5 megs per second to 25. Because I want to win the future. I want to invest. Because I'm having a Blog Talk radio show and I want to make sure I got a really fast internet. So I'm investing in the future. And I'm investing because, well, I need a faster car. You know, that old Amtrak / Nissan Maxima I got, well, that's just too slow. I need to invest in the future and trade in that Amtrak / Nissan Maxima and get myself a faster car. A much faster car. It doesn't matter who makes it. But I'm going to go ahead and buy that because I want to win the future. This is what this president is all about. Spending, 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 spending. When is he going to get it through his so-called brilliant head that we don't have all this jack to spend? But no. So here's what we're going to do. National Journal had a really nice piece out. It's called What You Can Do with $3.73 Trillion. That's how much the president wants to spend. So the budget for the President Obama is proposing today will allocate a total of $3.73 trillion into federal programs. That's not an easy number to get your head around, the article says. We take a look at just how big $3.73 trillion really is. Check it out. Defense, education, energy, and seniors are all beneficiaries of or in President Obama's budget request. But what else could one do with $3.7 trillion? Well, you could buy 5,006 Obama presidential campaigns. Obama broke the record when he raised $745 million on his campaign for president. At that rate, the budget could fund 506 presidential campaigns. I'm sorry. 5,006 presidential campaigns. Too much coffee. You can stack bills as high as 2.4 million Washington monuments. You could stack 3.73 trillion $1 bills on top of each other, and it would be as tall as, wow, 258,000 Washington monuments. That's a lot. You could buy the team you love to hate over and over again. Oh my goodness. That's New York Yankees. You could give each American $12,000. America is facing debt and home foreclosure. in this economic climate, well, $12,000 each, that'd be a pretty good chunk of change to help things along a little bit. You could give each American 104 Valentine's Days. An annual Valentine's Day consumer survey shows that the average American will spend $116.21 on the holiday this year, meaning the current budget could fund Valentine's Days for every U.S. citizen 104 times over. You could cover 10,319 miles with $1 bills. If you placed 3.73 trillion $1 bills end to end lengthwise, it would stretch from Miami to Seattle 3.6 times, leaving you somewhere around, well, Wyoming. That's a lot. I could go on and on and on with this, but I won't because it's starting to even bore me. But that's a lot of jack, needless to say. It's a lot of money. But dude wants to spend it. He wants to spend. What is this guy supposed to be, a genius? Is he supposed to be brilliant? Or does he simply not believe that we are very nearly broke? And some would argue that we are broke. What is going on with this administration? And you know what? It's not just the Obama administration. It's every liberal president, well, within the last 40 years, 50 years. They believe ideologically that we have money to burn. And if we don't have money, we can always, well, we can raise taxes and get more money. But those taxes have to come from somewhere. This administration is insulting. They believe that we're all a bunch of fools. Because President Obama himself said that his budget, this $3.7 trillion budget, will save us $1.5 trillion over the next 10 years. I guess he's banking on you and me just hearing $1.5 trillion or $1.3 trillion or a trillion and not the rest of that. I guess he's not banking on us like doing the calculations in our heads. Okay, how much is that over 10 years, carry the one, blah, 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 blah. He's not really, he thinks that we're a bunch of morons. That's nothing. Over 10 years, let's talk about saving 1. blah, blah, blah trillion over the course of 1 year or two or, you know what, maybe even three. But over 10 years? I heard somewhere today that it just about covers 2 cents on the dollar for the next 10 years. That's not a lot of money, dude. Now, President Obama projects that the gross federal debt will top $15 trillion this year, officially equaling the size of the entire U.S. economy. And we'll jump to nearly $21 trillion in 5 years' time. So saving $1.4 or $1.5 trillion over 10 years is nothing. I'm beginning to believe quite firmly. I didn't want to because, you know what, I don't believe this guy's brilliant by no stretch of the imagination. I believe that he's of adequate intelligence. Like most people. But I'm beginning to believe that this guy is doing this all on purpose. You can't be this stupid, this reckless with the United States economy. How could you possibly be? You're the president of the United States. In my mind, you know, I don't care for Mr. Obama. I've made that clear. I mean, I'm not disguising it at all. But, you know, I've not said these words ever because it hasn't crossed my mind until today. What this president is doing should be an impeachable offense, high crimes. No, exactly, a turnip greens. I'll tell you what, I'm beginning to believe that if this sort of reckless mismanagement of our federal budget continues, there'll be grounds for impeachment. Either he's brilliant, which I do not believe, or he's incompetent. Mr. Obama's budget said 2011 would see the biggest one-year jump in a debt in history, or nearly $2 trillion in a single year. And the administration says it will reach $15.476 trillion by September 30th, the end of the fiscal year. So to reach 102.6% of gross domestic product, GDP, the first time since World War II, well, since World War II, we've reached that figure. Now, I don't see any sense of urgency from the president about the massive federal debt. His budget calls for too much government borrowing, even though the debt is already at a level that makes it harder to create private sector jobs. Now he wants to tax oil corporations. He wants to tax and tax and tax. What do you think those taxes are going to do to these companies and corporations? They're going to have to cut back somewhere, and that means people. Speaking on MSNBC on Monday, Jacob Jack Lew, the White House budget director, said their long-term plan to lower deficits will stabilize the debt. Yeah, uh-huh. He said, when we came into office, the same old song, when President Obama took office, the deficit was climbing to over 10% of the economy. He said, we have a plan that will bring it down to 3%. That the most rapid reduction in deficit history, that he said that is the most rapid reduction in the deficit history. That would be the case if it were to happen. What you're saying, Mr. Mann, is that you have a plan that will bring it down. Plans don't always work, and it doesn't appear that you even have a plan. So to say that is the most rapid reduction in deficit history is erroneous. No, it would be if your plan worked, and we still don't know what your plan is. Now, I know that a lot of you out there are all scratching your heads and saying, well, what has this got to do with me? You know, you're going to work every day. You're doing your thing. You're paying your taxes. All of that. What does this all have to do with me? Me personally. Joe the plumber. Or Bob the electrician. Or Jack the grocery store manager. Well, we're going to find out soon enough. Because I could tell you, but, I mean, what would be the fun in that? Staggering tax hikes and increase the debt. Obama's $3.7 trillion budget includes staggering tax hikes and increases the debt. Fox News. Wow. I mean, and then on Friday, House Republicans unveiled their proposal for immediate cuts in federal spending. Uncharacteristically, they failed to accompany the release with a catchy slogan like "Eat the Future." Paul Krugman. Oh my goodness. Paul Krugman wants us to spend more. Spend more. Because apparently he believes that that's the best way to get us out of debt. And that is to spend and spend and spend and spend. That's the best way to get us out of this mess, is to spend more money that we don't have. So all those times when I was broke, all those years ago, as a young Marine, all those times where I didn't have any money to eat at the chow hall because I couldn't afford to eat off base, stayed on base housing because I couldn't afford to rent an apartment out in Triangle or Woodbridge out in Virginia, right off the base in Quantico. I couldn't afford all that. I had mouths to feed. All those times, the way to resolve all my issues was to spend more money that I didn't have. Obama lays out plans for wireless internet. He's calling for $10.7 billion to be, quote, invested, end quote, in developing a wireless network to support public safety agencies. Uh-huh. So what part of "we don't have that kind of money to spend" doesn't this guy understand? Oh, I know. The coffers are empty, so we're just going to tax the rich. We're going to tax the wealthy so that we'll have that money to spend. What happens when the wealthy don't have any more money to give? And somehow I think that Obama even has a plan for that. Because apparently his socialist takeovers of corporations, they happen because, well, it's an emergency. It's an emergency situation. He only did these things because, well, there is an emergency. And what else could he do? Okay. Let's move on. Obama's Christianity. Obama's fake Christianity. Now, President Obama's coddling of Islam has many Americans questioning his judgment, his national security judgment, if not his intentions, of course. In his administration's muddled response to the crisis in Egypt, one clear message came from all the president's men. Oh, yeah. A new government in Cairo has to include a whole host of important non-secular actors. As stated by White House spokesman Robert L. Gibbs, who is now gone, thank goodness. I couldn't stand that guy. I'd post my bail and have an attorney on standby just to take a smack at him. I mean, really, I would. The hitch is that in the Middle East, non-secular means radical Islamist, like the Muslim Brotherhood. Now, in the middle of this global clash of civilizations, Mr. Obama's own religious disposition is being questioned, yes, again. And not from the right, but from the left. That lunatic, Bill Maher. And you know what? Let me just go back a minute. When Bill Maher first hosted his show, Politically Incorrect, back in the mid to late 80s on HBO, I watched all the time. I was a big fan of Bill Maher's Politically Incorrect. Because at that time, during the mid to late 80s, when the show first started out, Bill Maher was not right or left. Not at all. He was extremely neutral. I know this is going to come as a surprise to many. He was very neutral. I mean, it was left and right he was going after. But now it seems that he's getting his most traction by bashing the right every single chance he gets and being so left of center that he can't even see center. But on his show, in real time, on Friday, host Bill Maher said of Mr. Obama, "I think he's a centrist the way he's a Christian." Not really. His mother was a secular humanist, and I think he is. When Princeton University professor Cornel West challenged Mr. Maher's point, and by the way, Cornel West, who happens to be a friend of mine, he is a lunatic as well. And Cornel, you know what? I hope you hear this, because I think you're a lunatic too. And I've said so many times. You're out there where the buses don't run. You're out there way, way out there where you have to take a dirt road to get to you. Okay? You know what? I'm going to call you after the show. I'm going to tell you what I just said about you. Well, anyway, Cornel West challenged Mr. Maher's point about Mr. Obama's religion, saying he changed his mind on the God question, Brother Bill. The comic retorted, and is he a comic? I don't think so. He's a comic, and like I'm a comic. Anyway, the comic retorted, "It's like when he says, I struggle with gay marriage." You don't struggle with gay marriage. You're fine with gay marriage. Another, you know, but see, Obama said that he struggles with gay marriage, so he can teeter on the edge there. So he can't be said that he's with it or without it. Just like when he was in the Illinois Senate, and he simply voted present more than 50% of the time. And just like in the Senate here, on the big stage, he voted present the majority of the time, because he didn't want to be for one thing or the other, and he didn't want it on the record. Well, now he's not on record as being for gay marriage or against it. He simply says he struggles with it. Simple con man. He's a con artist. A nice suit, a nice smile, a glib. What did I just describe? Well, your friendly neighborhood con artist. Anyway, back to the story. Another guest who insisted Mr. Obama has always been pretty centrist, hopefully reminded that Mr. Obama did go to church before he was a candidate for the presidency. That church, of course, was presided over by the racist, anti-American, hate-spewing Reverend Jeremiah Wright, who, yeah, I got to throw it out there. I visited that church just once. Back in 1977, when I was in high school, and I wanted to curry favor with my high school sweetheart, who visited that church every Sunday. Even back then, Jeremiah Wright, who was the pastor then, was so far left. You know, I didn't even notice it because, hell, I was 16. I was 16 years old. So, I mean, I didn't know. But anyway, I tell you what, there's so much going on over there. Let's move on. Bill Maher can be a funny guy. His website flashes the crack. It doesn't make me un-American to say I'd rather live in Paris than in places where cheese only comes in individually wrapped slices. That's funny. I didn't get that. Aside from the fact that bashing France is a national pastime and a pretty reliable measure of patriotism, a man who prefers unpasteurized fromage can't be all bad. Anyway, Bill Maher questions Barack Obama's Christianity, as do I. Because his mother wasn't a Christian. His father was a Muslim. Obama did attend Pastor Wright's church for 20 years, but if you know Chicago politics, like I do, being a native of Chicago, he spent time in Pastor Wright's church for the purposes of community organizing, simply for the same reason why I would go, whenever I visit Chicago, I would go to Pastor Wright's church, not to go inside, but to stand out in front of that church, park my car close to the church as I can, because the place is packed. There's no, very little place to park. Get out of my car. Stand out in front of Pastor Wright's church with my BlackBerry or my iPad or my iPhone and just wait for church to let out. I have a Bible in one hand and an iPhone in the other. Because I tell you what, that church has some of the most beautiful, eligible young ladies. And they come out of that church, it's just like shooting fish in a barrel. And that's why I go to Pastor Reverend Wright's mega church. Because I know that I have my pick of some of the most beautiful, beautiful women in Chicago. Because they're coming out of that church on Sunday. Well, for the same reason why I stand out in front of Pastor Wright's church and wait for the ladies to come out so I can have a date for the next weekend. That's where I want. Obama attends the church to be seen as a church-going Christian man. Because Obama was working the streets of Chicago, not the streets of the North Side, because the North Side is pretty racist. I'll tell you that right now. In Chicago, it is. All right? He's working the South Side of Chicago. And to be seen as a member of a mega church like Reverend Wright is a good thing for him. Because that's where the grassroots, people on the ground work is to be done. So going to church wasn't a matter of faith for Mr. Obama. I can tell you that right now. It's just how Chicago politics work. It's good business. It's good politics to pick a mega church. And there are several on the South Side that Obama could have chosen. He simply chose Reverend Wright's church. And yeah, he wasn't there every single Sunday. Oh, no. Oh, no. He was there enough, and he was there to be seen. It's all politics in Chicago. It's all about perception. That's what it's all about. So to suggest, for anyone to suggest that President Obama is a Christian, because he spent so much time in Reverend Wright's church, simply doesn't know Chicago, and they don't know Chicago politics. He needed those people in Chicago. He needed the folks on the South Side. He needed them to boost his rating. He needed them to work for him on the ground, to help get him elected. And it's my understanding that Reverend Wright did everything he could to get the people in that super mega church on the South Side of Chicago to get the word out and get the vote out for Obama. It was a Sembian circle. One hand was washing the other there. It wasn't about God. It wasn't about the Lord. It wasn't about Christianity. It wasn't about worship. It wasn't about Christianity. It was about business. And you take the word from a Chicagoan. Our motto in Chicago, well, we have two. Two models in Chicago. One is, where's mine? And the other is, what's in it for me? Remember those. Chicago models. Where's mine and what's in it for me? And every Chicagoan knows this. And those two phrases come from longtime, super famous, legendary columnist Mike Royko, who passed away some years ago. He said it best. He coined those two phrases for Chicago, and it is so true. Where's mine and what's in it for me? And Obama was all about where's mine and what's in it for me. And Reverend Wright helped him, helped to get the word out about Barack Obama to the whole south side of Chicago. So every time Obama visited Reverend Wright's church and shook hands with everybody and was introduced to, oh, we have House State Senator Barack Obama in the House today. Everybody, let's get the word out. Let's get the vote out. And Barack would stand up and look around, and folks would clap and blah, all of that would go on. Was it about worship? Do you think when Obama was sitting in that pew, holding that Bible, and he was thinking about worshiping the Lord? Yeah, I don't think so. Call me cynical. Please do. Obama is not a Christian. If he is, yeah, so did I. So did I, Loki. I keep a lot of his clippings. Loki writes Lloyd Royko. Yes, so did I. I never met him. I would have loved to have met him. Gone over to the Billy Goat Tavern, famous tavern in Chicago, and just kind of try to sit with him or something. I probably wouldn't have even gotten close because he was such a beloved figure in Chicago. And I'm sure that spot was taken. Okay. Barack Obama, Christian. Hardly. So now we have all of this stuff going on in the Middle East. Is it a good thing? Is it? Because MSNBC, NBC, and CBS and ABC are all saying that, hey, this is really great. This is really wonderful. This is really great. Look, democracy taking shape, democracy taking hold. There's no infrastructure for elections there. There's no infrastructure built for democracy. The only group that is organized in any way at all is the Muslim Brotherhood, who openly advocates the caliphate or the destruction of any modern-day civilization that does not live by and work toward the principles of Allah, of Islam. Okay. You know, when I see, I was talking to somebody who was saying that was so happy over the weekend that they were so happy that Egypt was free, that was going to be free and governed by democracy, and that the evil dictator had been overthrown without bloodshed. I was skeptical. I said, well, but who's going to take his place? There was no orderly transition of power. The military is now in power. Democracy equals two wolves and a sheep discussing what's for dinner. Oh, that's a good one. I'm going to have to write that down. That's good, Loki. Wonderful. I mean, I'm serious with that. That's pretty good. There's no infrastructure. The military's in place. That would I mean, think about it this way. Suppose we decided that President Obama was a jackass and a dictator and that he had to go by any means necessary. And he was overthrown. And a general took over the United States of America. The military took over the United States of America. Would anybody believe that that's a good thing? Okay, so we no. But somehow, MSNBC, ABC, CBS, all the mainstream media somehow believe that this is so wonderful that the evil president for life has been deposed. And now the military has taken over and we're going to have elections. Israel doesn't think it's so wonderful. And now, back. We're going to go back. We're going to backtrack to President Obama. This nonsense. I'm all over the place today. I've had a lot of coffee. I had a lot of caffeine, a lot of espresso. But I want to get this in before I go. This nonsense about President Obama being a Muslim. This nonsense about President Obama being a Christian. It's got to stop. Leave aside Obama's fanatical opposition to allowing Illinois hospitals to save the lives of babies with God-fearing souls inadvertently born alive during abortions. Also, leave aside the fact that neither of his parents were Christians, which I talked about earlier. And leave aside his current crop of, quote, spiritual advisors, end quote, which is a collection of Mother Earth worshipers, polytheists, and other non-believers. Yeah. The only evidence of Obama's Christianity is that he faithfully attended Reverend Wright's church. Am I right? Yes, I am. He's the same guy that said, "God damn America." And he vouches for Obama's Christianity. Okay. I don't want to go back to Reverend Wright's church. No, because I have so many things I want to say about that awful, horrible church, but I won't do it right now. But, you know, according to MSNBC TV's Chris Matthews, it is provable, it is a provable scientific fact that Obama is a Christian because, wait for it, he said so. Matthew said to his several viewers that you get credit for being of the religion you say you are, that we accept that in America. It's called freedom of religion and respect for religion. So I guess lying is something we respect. That, you know what? That would make professions of religious belief, unlike all other professions, unchallengeable. Liberals say conservatives don't believe in civil rights. I say liberals are godless traitors. Why is one statement debatable and the other not? Does anyone question the Christianity of Jim and Tammy Faye Baker? How about the Satanists claiming to be Christians who stand outside soldiers' funerals with signs that say, "God hates fags"? And for the record, the alleged inviolent assertion of one's own religious beliefs wasn't so inviolent when it came to my favorite president, Ronald Reagan. I say I am God, therefore I am. Tip O'Neill used to question President Reagan's Christianity all the time, taunting the president for not attending church regularly. Matthews might remember that. He was working for O'Neill at the time. In fact, parading the church in front of the TV cameras carrying a 10-pound Bible, like a certain serial adulterer impeached president I could name, but I won't, is strongly discouraged by the creator of the universe. Beware of practicing your righteousness before men to be noticed by them. Otherwise, you have no reward with your Father who is in heaven. Matthew 6.1. Some conservatives have cited Obama's near complete refusal to go to church to suggest that he's not the devout Christian who prays every day, as the White House claims. But that's not proof. Christians, to the contrary, it's Obama's church attendance back in Chicago that proves he's the atheist. This was inadvertently omitted by Obama's leading butt boy, Richard Wolf, on MSNBC Monday, a couple of nights ago. Wolf acknowledged that Wright's liberation theology was not Christianity. Liberation theology. But then forcefully distinguished Obama from Reverend Wright, i.e. Obama's sole character witness for his alleged Christianity. Of Glenn Beck's denunciation of liberation theology as a false religion, Wolf said, he is debating Jeremiah Wright, or is he debating Barack Obama? They're both different people. If he wants to debate liberation theology with Wright, he's got something to talk about. But liberation theology hasn't been anything espoused by this president. Well, of course not, because this president is sitting on the fence, because he doesn't want to be seen as Christian or Muslim. Because he doesn't want to offend one person or one group of people over the other. This guy has absolutely no scruples whatsoever. All liberals are atheists. Only the ones who stand for election even bother pretending to believe in God. No sane human is required to take Obama's profession of Christianity any more seriously than if it were coming from a 1980s blow-dried, money-grubbing televangelist with a mistress on the side. Not being acquainted with any actual Christians, they aren't particularly good bluffers. That's why Democrats babble incoherently whenever the subject of religion comes up. Liberals acting devout always looks like the love scenes between Tom Cruise and Kelly McGillis in Top Gun. Awkward and unconvincing, because Kelly was a lesbian. Didn't find that out for many years. She was so hot in that movie. Huh? That first scene when she comes into the hangar. Did we know she was a lesbian at that time? No. Would it have mattered? Probably not. Former divinity student Al Gore famously botched a biblical verse, switching God's instructions that we put heaven before earthly things. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Matthew 6:21. But saying we should make earth our treasure. Howard Dean told a reporter his favorite book of the New Testament was Job.
Mm-hmm.
Poor Howard. He's the gift that keeps on giving also. It took the Democrats' born-again Christian Jimmy Carter 3 decades to announce in 2005 that he didn't think Jesus would approve of abortion unless the mother's life or health was in danger, or perhaps the pregnancy was caused by rape or incest, etc., etc. There's only one true Christian liberal in this country. Only one. And his name is Mike Huckabee. That's his name, Mike. Okay. Wow. Now, we talked about Obama being a Muslim and all that. And that's all really good, whether he's a Muslim or a Christian. It really doesn't matter in the overall scheme of things, except he's doing a terrible job at pretending that he's a Christian. Who the hell is Barack Obama? Is he a socialist, a Muslim, anti-American, pro-Palestinian, pro-Islam, or just a man who's right sometimes and wrong most of the time? Now, Bill O'Reilly opts for the second opinion in his book, Pinheads and Patriots. Bill rigorously focuses on what Obama does and not who he is. He refuses to speculate about motivation, preferring instead the more solid ground of observing and frequently condemning his policies. The whole is never larger than the sum of its parts in O'Reilly's book. In fact, they're not really adding up at all. And when we see what's going on and we witness what is happening in Egypt right now and all over the Middle East, all over Europe, one wonders if, what is the end game here? Is it democracy? Is it moving toward an American-style democracy with a constitution, with a Senate, with a House of Representatives? Or is it moving toward radical Islam? As you study President Obama, you keep coming back to some basic questions. Did he really think that his stimulus spending would end the recession despite the failure of George W. Bush's stimulus in 2008? Or did he want to expand the public sector at all cost and seize this opportunity to do so? Did he ever really believe he could lower health care costs through his legislation? Or was he just saying that to socialize medicine in America? Did he really think he could win hearts and minds in the Islamic world? Or is he just anti-Israel? I think that he is anti-Israel. I firmly believe that Barack Obama is anti-Israel, and this is not a game to be played. Israel is surrounded on all sides, and even though they have been victorious in butt-whooping when it comes to their enemies, they are now completely surrounded. Because as of 2 weeks ago, the only country that stood between Israel and the rest of the and the Muslim world was Egypt. And now Egypt has fallen. And there's no clear deterrent. And the grapevine tells me that Israel is gearing up for a battle, for a showdown. And I suspect, although I have no word on the matter, that if Israel is backed into a corner, nuclear weapons are an option. So one wonders, while this president vacations and golfs and spends every last dime we have on high-speed rail and solar shingles and high-speed internet, that the whole wide world is crumbling around us and headed for war. Wasn't this guy supposed to be our savior? After all, someone did write on inauguration day that, hey, stop knocking Obama for being a community organizer. Jesus was also a community organizer. Somebody actually wrote that. I think it was Time Magazine or Newsweek or one of those two. So he was supposed to bring everybody together. He was a rock star. He was all over the Middle East, all over Europe. Thousands came out to cheer. Someone suggested that he was not only president of the United States of America, he was president of the world. Somebody actually said that in the press, that not only was he president of the United States, but he was president of the world. And now the world is crumbling. Nobody's listening to the guy because he's a candy ass. He's not a Vladimir Putin. Vladimir, as I stated numerous times, rides around horseback, bare shirt, in 30-degree weather with a high-powered rifle slung over his back. Nobody's going to talk crap to him. When he speaks, folks are going to listen. But you've got our president. He's standing out on the beach, and he's got a shirtless, no hair on his chest, body of a 12-year-old boy, chest of a 12-year-old boy, and he's eating a Frosty cone. Who's going to listen to that guy? Nobody. And nobody is listening to him. No, you're right. Israel won't lose. Because if there's anything that Israel knows, it's how to whoop some butt. I want to use the other word. I'm not really feeling like it right now. You know the word I'm looking for. No, they will not lose. They have not lost. They have some of the greatest warriors available. And I would say, I'd like to say that they have the United States on their side, the most powerful military operation on the planet. But I can't even say that anymore with a straight face. I'm smiling right now saying it. Because who knows? I don't even know that Obama would even get involved, would even help. I don't think he likes Israel at all. Hey, we're running out of time. I really would like to continue this. An hour is just not enough. Well, I'd like to thank everyone who has been listening. I hope you have a wonderful night. Happy Valentine's Day. Happy Valentine's night. Happy day tomorrow. Please come back tomorrow. We'll talk some more. Call in if you have any thoughts. Once again, thanks for listening. Good night, and God bless you. Do 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 do.